Another one of the key factors that the revenue will look at, the provision of equipment, materials and tools. If we first of all look at a construction industry type of situation where the contractor provides all of the equipment and materials to do the work, revenue officers may argue that the subcontractor is an employee, ignoring, of course, the supply of the small hand tools that they would provide whether they were employed or self-employed. Well, direct employees in certain trades will also use their own hand tools and may claim a tax-free allowance. In the construction industry, I would say it's unrealistic for the labour-only subcontractor, including many skilled tradesmen, to provide the major items of equipment. I will also say it's difficult to draw a line past which it can be said that the provision of tools and equipment amounts to self-employment, or until it's reached, the conclusion has to be employment. So you can't say that if they spend £5,000 on equipment, they're clearly self-employed. If they spend £4,999, they're clearly employees. It's not that easy. But in a construction situation, it's often the case that the issue of materials equipment is argued towards employment when it's provided everything that is by the contractor. Wouldn't readily accept that. In a non-construction case in the Court of Appeal, the decision in Hall versus Lorimer is important in this context. It was noted that Mr. Lorimer did not provide any premises, tools, equipment, or workshop, but that was not his business, and he was held to be self-employed on the facts of that case. Mr. Lorimer was a vision mixer in the film industry. He went along to the studios and did the work there using their equipment. But on the basis that he was in business, that he had a lot of customers, it was held that he was self-employed. It wasn't held against him that he didn't use his own equipment. Probably the best approach is to differentiate between the worker that is provided with everything by the engager as opposed to the self-employed worker that provides all or most of what he needs, other than perhaps the major items of equipment provided by, say, a main contractor in the construction industry. Whether or not a worker provides any or all of the equipment will not be a deciding factor on its own, although where he does provide significant amounts of materials and or works on a supply and fixed basis, say, in the construction industry, that will provide a strong case for self-employment. The absence of materials, etc., will not be decisive, and you have to look at individual situations. But this leads on to another point, the degree of financial risk involved. Revenues officers, and indeed its employment status indicator tool, which I'll talk about a little bit later, place a great deal of emphasis on the degree of risk taken by someone claiming to be self-employed. To some extent, this will include the financing of the purchase of equipment, materials and tools referred to above. It might be the provision of a vehicle by the worker, if used to do the work, not just to get there. It can be seen as important. The revenue might expect that a self-employed worker would be expected to tender a price for the job as opposed to being paid by the hour or the day or the week, and then to finish the job within the agreed price, perhaps making good any overruns at their own expense, and really being in a risk situation of not being able to earn more money because of having to finish something that they've got wrong. In contrast, revenue's attitude is that if a worker is paid by the hour for all the hours worked, and perhaps they might receive additional payments such as overtime or a bonus for successful completion of the job, revenue will argue such a worker will be an employee. Well, in reality, many workers are paid a daily rate. Certainly in the construction industry, daily rate is common in some trades. And depending on the skills of the worker and market forces, worker shortages would push the rate up. And if there's loads of workers in a particular trade, the rates might come down. What mustn't be overlooked is that many workers are paid daily rates and can make a profit or loss significantly within the daily rate system, because if they get the job done by lunchtime, they're free to go off and do other work. If they haven't finished by the normal, perhaps knocking off time, the worker might have to stay and finish the job, or even come back over the weekend and not get paid for extra hours. In other words, suffering a loss. So again, you need to bear these points in mind, not just accept the revenue's arguments. Certainly in the construction industry, and perhaps elsewhere, one of the greatest risks for workers is the weather. Yes, because the work stops when the site is closed, or it can't be reached because of the weather. If there's no work, no pay, and that's a real issue in that industry, and a real risk that has to be borne by the genuinely self-employed subcontractor. If this is the case, as it so often is, it needs to be made clear to the revenue compliance officer, and it's a strong argument for self-employment. The contrast, of course, is if you find that the worker is paid the same amount every week, week after week, and is paid for holidays, the revenue are not going to accept they're self-employed. I'm always looking at that. I'm always concerned about that. Look at the Christmas holiday period as well, for example, to see how they paid then. Okay, next thing, the length and number of the engagements. There seems to be somewhat of a myth running around that employment status is dependent purely on the length of the engagement, and that if a worker only works for one engager or customer over a long period of time, then the status automatically switches to employment. Is that right? I don't think it is. The Revenues Film Industry Unit has a rule of thumb period of 9 months for certain trades where self-employment would be accepted if the contract doesn't exceed a 9-month period. If it's over 9 months, then clearance has to be sought from them. But there's nothing in law that says 9 months is a period after which employment takes place. Some people have suggested 12 months working for one engager alters the employment status, and even exceeding 3 months has been suggested by some as the maximum period before employment sets in. There isn't a legal limit, and working for one day could be employment just as much longer periods on one particular contract can be self-employment. This is the case in the construction industry, the IT industry. There can be long-term projects which are still genuine self-employment. However, it's important for you as advisors to recognise the danger signs and that long periods of working, especially exclusively with one customer, may be regarded by the revenue as a pointer to employment. In contrast, of course, shorter periods will point more towards self-employment, but still, taken with all the other factors, that's where the decision has to be made. It is clearly a fact that where someone works for a number of different customers or engagers in one tax year, or indeed over a longer period, that person is more likely to be accepted as self-employed. But again, be careful, however, because it's still the particular circumstances of each engagement that should be considered, balanced with a measure of total overview. If a self-employed worker does only work for one customer, he will look like an employee. If he works for many customers, he will look self-employed. But individual engagements could be an employment or a self-employment, depending on the terms and conditions between the two parties in those particular engagements. It's often asked if it's sufficient to create breaks between contracts with the same customer in order to protect self-employment. I'm often asked, how long should a break be? What helps is the evidence this provides of lack of mutual obligations, the absence of any restriction on the worker to leave the job and go and work elsewhere. I see many examples where someone who is generally self-employed just tells the contractor, I'm off, I'm going, maybe going on holidays, maybe got better paid work somewhere else, maybe just wants a break. They can do that. Much more difficult for an employee to do that.